Welcome to episode 6. This 6, I think it's 6, of the Instant Offense Podcast. I'm James Holis, writer for B-Ball Breakdown, and this is the second of my season preview series I'm trying to run off. So I'm joined by a very special guest today, Mr. Braden Gordian. He is the founder and the current editor over at 48MinutesToHell.com, which is a True Hoop affiliate. He was actually one of the original True Hoop blogs that started it off. Hey, Braden, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm really good, man. I'm glad that I got a chance to get you on there. You've been one of my favorite followers for a while.
Thank you.
I wasn't the biggest fan of you Spurs guys for the longest. There's nothing that you guys were doing because the Spurs are just so damn good. Yeah, it got kind of nerve-wracking. I really wrote you guys off for dead, the Spurs off for dead about 2 or 3 years ago when Tim had that little downturn, and here we are again. You guys are probably one of the favorites in the West. So, 48MinutesToHell.com, one of my favorites, and you're the founder. You're a busy man, man. You've had your fingers in a lot of things NBA related over the last few years. Where else have people probably seen your work?
Yeah, I've done a lot of stuff for ESPN.com as well, and over the year I've written for The Classical, some of, if y'all are familiar with that. Have also written for New York Magazine and the All Parade Magazine, a few other places on a bunch of different sports. I've kind of been around the world of journalism for a little bit, did some freelance writing, spent a few years in TV. So it's, been here and there, but the NBA is really my love, so, I kind of always come back to it at the end of the day.
Like the old catchphrase, I love this game. So how did you tell us a little bit how you started off, how you came up with the concept and everything for 48 Minutes to Hell?
Sure. To be honest, I was working in Chicago. I was living in Chicago at the time, working for a political consulting firm out there. Actually, I used to work in politics back in the day. I kind of wanted to start writing and start getting in, start expressing that in some way. And somebody gave me the advice. They said, start with what you love, start with what you know. I said, well, I think I know about the NBA. I guess we'll see. So I started I just started the blog. It was started as a Blogspot account. I was writing about everything. I was always a Spurs fan, so we kind of tended to lean towards writing about the Spurs more often than not. And then back in the day, it was when J.E. Skeets, who now is one of the on-air personalities for the Starters on NBA TV, became a fan of my writing, started linking to my stuff when he was the editor of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. If you're kind of an old member of the blog world, you might remember back when Skeets used to do that back before Dan Devine was over there. And so he started linking to my stuff. The blog got kind of popular. And then sometime around that fall, I got a call just out of the blue from Kevin Arnovitz, who is, a really awesome NBA reporter. If you don't read his stuff, you definitely need to be doing so. He said, listen, I've teamed up with a guy named Henry Abbott. We're going to be starting a blog network. There's going to be one for every NBA team. We want you to be our Spurs guy. It's going to be with ESPN. I had only been doing this for about 6 months, maybe. I was like, sure, of course. I mean, I had never in my wildest dreams thought that I would get like a cold call from ESPN about, possibly collaborating with him on something. And here we are, I guess, 7 years later and still blowing and going and doing our thing. And luckily, the team is still relevant. I think at the time, probably like yourself, I also didn't imagine that circa 2015, not just the Spurs, but this particular group of Spurs would still be a force to be reckoned with in the NBA. That was kind of, I honestly didn't imagine that, so.
I mean, it's pretty ridiculous, and I think we're gonna look back in 2025 at what the Spurs did, for this whole since what was it? We go 97, 98. We're gonna look back and we're talking almost a 20-year run of just unparalleled excellence. It's pretty damn frustrating for the rest of us NBA fans.
Not to gloat, but I think that I'm currently 30. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe, and I'm not meaning to gloat, it's just fact, I believe the Spurs have missed the playoffs twice in my lifetime, which is the year before they drafted Tim Duncan and the year before they drafted David Robinson, I believe, are the only 2 years, which which is just astounding. I mean, that's an astounding level of success. Basically a seamless transition from Gervin to Robinson to Duncan, you know, from one MVP to the next. It's honestly, I mean, I think the real truth of the matter is there's a lot of luck involved with that. There's obviously a lot of skillful management and great play, but there's also just a lot of luck involved. You have to admit that.
So yeah, so by not wanting to gloat, you gloated pretty well, which is hey, you know what? When you're good, man. What are you gonna do? Until somebody beats you and you guys are good, then what can you say, right? And it looks like again, the last couple of years, of course, you know, I think Tony Parker's starting to slow down a little bit. We know Duncan,
sure.
Eventually he's going to have to retire, maybe. I don't know when. But, you know,
right.
Yeah. Honestly, right, he was one of the best centers in the league this year still. It's amazing. But seriously,
it's funny how, because only a couple of years ago, we presumed every year that Duncan would significantly decline the next. That was always kind of the tone of the discussion, right? Was, well, this is probably the year that Duncan starts to fall off. At this point, everyone seemed to just accept the fact that it's plausible that he could play at this level somewhat indefinitely. Like, no one seems to really be waiting around for that decline anymore, because he just doesn't seem to exist within the same physical reality of basically every other NBA player. It's a little astounding.
Let's talk about it. So a quick aside before we jump into the real Spurs stuff. What happened? Because a couple years ago he did. He looked like he was like a mummy out there. And he looked all right. Well, this is probably his last year. He might have one more year just to have a victory, you know, a goodbye tour. And then he came back the next year looking like, you know, he had found a time machine. Literally, seriously, he came back playing like he was still like 97, 98, and since then, mm-hmm. So what happened that year? Do you remember?
I think there's a combination of factors. One is he dropped some weight. He dropped about 20 pounds, which allowed him to move a little more, you know, have a little more agility out there on the floor and take a little bit of pressure off of his lower body and his knees, which really had started to give him a lot of trouble. And that much weight can make a huge difference. Two, they started to move away from the four down offense and working him on the low block to the weak side motion offense, where he was working more often out of the high pick and roll, meaning that he was banging less often on the offensive end of the floor. And he really started to master that 10 to 12 foot jumper. You started to see that somewhat constantly, much less infrequently working in the post. And then beyond that, it's also around the time that they finally had Thiago Splitter come over from Europe. And what that also allowed was that Thiago was able to take those tough, banging big man assignments, and it no longer started to wear, and Duncan didn't get that defensive wear and tear that for years and years and years he had kind of shouldered, which I think is the question coming into this season, is that who now is going to be that banger in what is a very, very big West and an especially big division? Who's going to be the guy who bears that load on the inside?
That's a perfect lead into let's jump right on in, because San Antonio is, when people say, hey, why don't you do what San Antonio does? And, you know, teams are trying to emulate the Spurs way. It's impossible, because you guys are a major outlier. Spurs are a major outlier in the fact that you've had, everything, like you said, luck played so much into it, because everything had to be just so. But it's always, you guys made your own luck, though. You have a great, strong front office, great coach, and all the players, obviously the culture there is so strong that, I mean, Danny Green gave up a lot of money to stay there. He did, obviously.
That's true.
And then, then Tim Duncan, you know, he doesn't care about the money anymore either, it seems like. For the last few years, he's been, you know, that's just what it is. It is what it is. But, I mean, like, everything seems like it comes to an end, and then here comes LaMarcus Aldridge. And did you watch any summer league, a little bit at least?
I did watch some of summer league, yeah. I watched a little bit of the guys, especially as they started to have some success. And I'm a huge Becky Hammon fan also, and have loved the work she's done. So I did want to see a little bit of her coaching and kind of how she managed manage the team. I was very intrigued by that. That seems funny to say that you watch Summer League to see the coaching more than the players, but to be honest, I just was so excited for the opportunity she had. So.
Right. It's awesome because it's amazing. Again, any other team, I think if they hire Becky Hammon and they have her run Summer League, it comes off a lot more gimmicky. But I think everyone will probably agree with me. I mean, with the Spurs, this is like the Spurs are such an authentic, real deal team that, I mean, it makes perfect sense and they're doing it for the right reason, which is good. So, not just LaMarcus, but you also have Kyle Anderson. You got picked him up last year. And I've never heard this kid before, Jonathan Simmons. Tell us a little bit about what you saw with Kyle Anderson and Jonathan Simmons this year.
Well, I think that they're both really exciting prospects. Simmons has been a guy who's been on the program's radar for a while now. He's a really great story because he's a walk-on for the Austin Spurs, who I believe were actually the Toros still when he walked on, but he just showed up to open tryouts one day, which is, I don't know how many guys in the league who are actually on a roster in the NBA were open tryout D-League guys. But if the number was only Simmons, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yes, I've never heard. I had no idea that this happened. What school did he go to? Do you know?
Gosh, I forget where Simmons went to school. You know, that's a great question. We'll look that up before the end here and figure it out. But he was considered a decent draft pick back in 2012, but he went undrafted. He spent a little time in the ABL, bounced around a little bit, walked on with the Toros. Immediately, the coaching staff there said, and this has been buzzing around the franchise for a while now, the coaching staff there recognized that he had NBA physicality. He had NBA size, speed, and strength. And that in some sense, that sets you apart from a lot of the somewhat skilled players who are in the D-League who just can't hang athletically. Yeah, and that clearly was not his issue. And that showed in Summer League where he looked fast. He looked strong. He looked, you know, he clearly looked like an NBA player out there.
So I was going to say, I've never heard his name before. I watched Summer League and this guy just, I mean, I remember who the hell is this guy? Who is this? Because he looked like he, you know, almost like, of course, not the pro skills, but body-wise and the way he attacked the rim and he was ferocious, I was like, is this, you know, was he drafted before and he was, you know, stashed overseas or something? Because who is this dude? But, yes, the NBA physicality will not be a problem for him. He's a good solid 6'6", probably about 200 pounds. Good
yeah.
strong guard.
I think, you know, don't get me wrong, he's not, you know, going to be the difference in the Spurs winning or not winning a title, but over the course of what is a very long season where there's a lot of minutes to be played, you're talking about possibly having a guy who can really contribute as a member of the rotation who is basically plucked out of thin air. So that's invaluable. A little bit similar, although he's a very different kind of player, to the way that they just stumbled upon Gary Neal a few years ago, where Gary Neal came out of nowhere and then suddenly they had this guy who could legitimately play 20 minutes a game. I don't think Simmons is a 20 minutes a game guy. I think he's less than that. But on an old team where some of your workhorses could use some rest, especially Tony and Manu, to have a guy like Simmons who can legitimately go out there and hold serve, can put the ball in the basket, has the athletic ability to play defense if he focuses, I think that's huge. On the complete flip side of that is Kyle Anderson, clearly has an NBA skill set, and the question is, does he have NBA athleticism? Because, oh boy, the guy moves slowly, right? I mean, he's in no rush to get anywhere out there on the court. And I love the guy, and I think that his game, I don't think he would succeed on every team, but I think the way the Spurs are built, especially on the offensive end, is a huge boon to his future in the league, because he has a lot of potential to succeed in the constant motion, long range shooting, kind of like off ball motion offense that the Spurs run. I think that his passing ability, his shooting ability, his vision, his inherent kind of sense of rhythm that he has, I think that he has the potential to really succeed in their offense. I don't know that he'd do well everywhere, but he's in the right place at the right time, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he shows, I mean, obviously he seemed like he has a really good feel for the game. He showed that in college, and he showed it in for you guys. He was with the D League last year, I guess, right? Like, and summer league, he showed it. And my only thing is, yes, offensively, you know, no problem. He can move the ball. He'll score a little bit in the post, whatever. But defensively, my concern with him is, sure, he did all right in summer league, but I mean, you know, pro game is a pro game. The guy's gonna go at him, and he just doesn't have the foot speed. So I guess I'm interested to see with him how they compensate for that. So let's
I
get,
think
I
that's a
mean,
legitimate concern.
right. And so before we get to the big gem, we're not going to touch on LaMarcus yet. Let's talk a little bit about your off season was great for the simple fact that you were able to retain Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard. To what
Sure.
I mean, Kawhi, they maxed Kawhi out, right? But that's no biggie. That's going to happen regardless. Kawhi could have
Sure.
got cute with it, right? He could have took a shorter deal and got more money next year and more the next. But he just said, "Give me my what, $95 million, I think."
Yeah, somewhere around there. I think originally
Right.
it was reported at 90, but after the cap came in higher than expected, I think it ended up being raised to 95. Yeah.
Something like, well, either way, like I said, he could have pulled a LeBron or modified LeBron and got a couple of years now and then got really cashed in 2 years, and didn't even think about it, I guess. Seemed like he's got the contract, and next, you know, hey, Kawhi's, we got him. And then Danny Green, that's what blew my mind, because I heard a lot of talk in the during the season. Oh, Danny Green's gonna be a max player this summer. He's gonna command 17. He's gonna command 15, and it's gonna be a steal with the new contract. And I mean, I didn't agree with it, but of course I see why, and especially for the Spurs and or any team really. You know, he's that guy. He's not gonna be your second or third option, but he'll knock down high rate of threes. He's gonna lock down defensively, and a big thing that transition defense of his is something that I've never quite seen before. The fact
Oh
that
my
he will.
gosh, it is unbelievable. It's honestly, I think that's right. To see that kind of transition defense from a guard, the way that he just two on one scenarios, him as the lone defender, and he just absolutely swallows up plays. I don't get how he does it. His timing and his perfect sense of aggression. The measured way in which he kind of doesn't foul and forces guys into tough decisions. He's really a spectacular transition defender. It's such a niche thing to point out, but you're right. It's really excellent.
It's
I
uncanny,
think you're
man.
right though. Yeah, it's honestly every time it still blows me away every time he makes a great play in the open court like that. No, but I think you're right. I think it's amazing that he came back. I certainly think that, you know, the market for him was plausibly somewhere around what Damari Carroll got. I think of them as kind of maybe roughly equivalent. They're a little bit different in the details, but just in terms of what you might pay for a player like that, it seemed to me like, you know, there was probably somewhere around five per year that Danny left on the floor. And I mean, why do these guys do this? You know, why does Kawhi, you know, pick up a deal on day one? Why does Danny immediately pick up a deal also, not even explore the open market? Which, let's also be honest, this isn't the first time that Danny hasn't been aggressive. 3 years ago, the Spurs locked up Danny at five per for 3 years, and a lot of people at the time thought that was an under market deal. They were a little amazed that people were sleeping on Danny because he clearly had so much potential. And I saw a couple of people at the time. I think Zach Lowe also said he was very surprised that Danny only got 15 over three, and in some sense, his surprise, you know, is validated given the type of performances you saw from him in the NBA Finals twice and at other times, and he blossomed into a really great player. So I think that, but I think at the end of the day, I think they feel that they'll consistently compete for titles. I think there's a lot of love and trust in that locker room. I think it's hard to put your finger on why exactly guys stay. For me, I look at it as there's a moment where I thought to myself, I used to think Danny was leaving. I used to think there's no, we just don't have the money. The Spurs are gonna max Kawhi. And when they do so, it's not going to leave them with the flexibility to keep Danny. And that's okay. That's the NBA. Even though I love Danny Green, you got to move on. But then I remember sitting there after game seven of the first round of this playoff, and Danny Green took the podium and he started crying and talking about how upset he was that he wasn't able to do it for Tim and Manu and Tony, and how much it meant for him to have a chance to play with them and for them to win. And the way he talked about his teammates, for me, was genuinely unlike anything I had ever seen. For a guy in the first round who had already won titles, I mean, they have nothing to be ashamed of, right? They've literally nothing to be ashamed of. They've been to the mountaintop. And he still seemed so, and at the time, and then I was watching that and I thought to myself, I think he's coming back. I think this looks to me like a guy who is not done playing with his teammates. And
yeah.
I guess it became true. It was an earnest moment and it bore fruit, I guess. So.
Yeah, and it's crazy because if somebody wrote a movie with a team like the Spurs and all these things happen in the movie, I'd say, all right, this is BS. No player is going to – you know, I guess it's sad because we're kind of cynical about the sports world because it is a business. No matter how much we want it to be about team and Ubuntu and all that, it's a business. It is, right? But the Spurs take it to a whole nother level where it sounds really corny and cheesy, but they really put the team above themselves. And Jesse Blanchard talks about it sometimes where the players know that if they put leave money on the table, guess what? They know the team's going to turn around and put it somewhere to make the team better.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's an interesting thing. You know, it's an interesting point because I think the other secret storyline of this season, or the kind of, it's not secret as much as forgotten, is the reality of the Kawhi signing, which is that I think that there's some really strong evidence that Kawhi and the organization had basically come to terms last summer. They basically knew what the deal was going to be, but they knew that if they signed an extension last year, that they would be not in a position to be aggressive in the free agent market this year. So they agreed to hold off and wait to let the Spurs try to aggressively chase some of the big fish who are going to be in the free agent market, because that would be to both the benefit, of the team and Kawhi, that he gets to play alongside another all-star caliber player. And I think that's why you saw Kawhi's deal announced basically at, I mean, they didn't actually announce it, but it was basically done at 12:01 that first night of free agents, that the free agent market opened up during the moratorium. It was instantaneously done because there was no drama around it this season. There were no questions. There was no speculation about people who might offer him a deal that would put the Spurs in a tough spot in terms of restricted free agency and things like that. There was never any speculation around that, because I think the worst kept secret was that the Spurs and Kawhi had a deal for 365 days. But they knew that it would limit their flexibility if they signed it last year. So I think that's stuff like that is not, that's a competitive advantage that's hard to measure, the way they've got the players to buy into the process. It's really unique.
It is. Your front office has built up so much cachet and so much trust and banked so much goodwill with the player that, yeah, any other team, guess what? Hey, so let's hold off to next year, and they're like, whatever, man. If I break my leg or whatever, I'm not going to get paid.
Yeah.
Just give me my money now. Let's not play games. But, I mean, the ultimate trust. And it worked out because you guys were able to talk to LaMarcus Aldridge. And it's funny because the whole, you know, of course, I guess, like a conflict kind of drives these entertainment sports networks. So, where is LaMarcus going to fit? Where is he going to go? He's talking to Phoenix. He's talking to – I knew from the minute that Spurs were targeting LaMarcus Aldridge, I said LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be a Spur. And I know you probably won't say that because it is a business. Who knows what he's going to do? I knew from the minute that I heard Spurs are targeting LaMarcus Aldridge, I said he's going to be a Spur. So let's talk a little bit about your brand new power forward. You
Sure.
got Move Splitter. Yeah, you Move Splitter. Who else did you guys move? Corey Joseph is gone. He signed up in Toronto.
Corey's
So you
gone.
lost.
Marco
Yeah.
Bellinelli's gone.
Marco's in Sacramento. So you lost a little depth, and you cleared a little extra money so you can get Lamarcus to come in there. This does mean, as you were just saying, Splitter, you took the big physical assignments and you took some of the brunt off of Tim Duncan, but now Tim's gonna pretty much probably exclusively center when Lamarcus is in, right? And I think it's no secret that Lamarcus has made it clear he doesn't really like playing center. So
Yeah,
go ahead.
that's true.
I want you to talk to me about how this offense now is gonna work. He likes a lot of the same spots Tim Duncan does from the floor. He likes to step out and face up. He shoots a lot more than Tim, of course. And it's funny because his offense is predicated, or hasn't predicated the last few years, around a taboo shot. He's made his bread and butter that mid-range shot that he makes it at a good enough rate, but he shoots a lot of them. So yeah, talk to me a little bit about how this fit's going to work for this person.
Well, I think it's, first of all, I think it's going to work very well, partly because I think that we're under, it's amazing to say this, but people are not necessarily sufficiently appreciating the fact that Greg Popovich is still the coach. And with this many offensive weapons, it's like this is a terrific problem for him to have. To say, oh man, I have so many guys who can score in so many different ways. I understand there's only one ball at a time, but I think that he's pretty pleased to have this problem. I also think that what they've always done really, really well is that they've had kind of counter plays that are release valves for their focal points, which their focal point as an offense has always been the rim and the 3-point line. And but they've
Right.
always had a lot of release valve plays that start to pull people away from those two spots, which is that they have a lot of players in Tony and Tim and then also Manu, but Kawhi, who actually do shoot a fair amount from the mid-range, who take a fair amount of long twos because that helps the defense not be able to overly focus on those areas. And I think that LaMarcus is only that to the nth degree, right? That if the rest of the offense remains hyper-focused on the rim and the 3-point line, the defense now is not going to be able to just hone in on those two places because LaMarcus will make it very, very hard on them if that's what they do. And I think they'll do some very creative things. I'm also intrigued to see what they do with Kawhi and LaMarcus on the floor together. I think something you start to see with Kawhi and Keith increasingly carry more and more of the offensive load, especially in that first round series against the Clippers. There was a bunch of plays where they basically ISO'd Kawhi, which blew my mind a little bit. Very un-Spursy and historically not the role Kawhi plays. He's not the offensive workhorse even when he's had big shooting games. But they were asking him to carry a huge load. Now that load will be on LaMarcus, but I think the two of them on that left side, I think you're going to see some interesting two-man game stuff that isn't always historically something the Spurs do, but there's going to be some really tough stuff. I mean, Kawhi and LaMarcus in a spread pick and roll from the wing scenario is going to be very hard to cover. There's going to be some very tough decisions for defenses to make. I think they've got, I'm pretty excited for what they can do on the offensive end. My bigger concern is probably defensive. It's probably, which is funny to say because they have some elite defensive players, but it's more of a wear and tear thing. Is that who is the guy who's going to bang with Dwight Howard and Marc Gasol and DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin and Serge Ibaka over and over and over for 82 games and still be ready to go come the playoffs? That's my question.
That's a very valid concern, because as you said, offensively it's almost disgusting thinking about Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus running screen and roll together with Danny Green spacing out the floor in the corner. But Speaking of Kawhi, I remember a couple years ago when he first started flourishing, and you know, I guess he was like a 14-6 guy, or you know, 14 points a game, six rebounds. And people were like, "Oh yeah, great 3-and-D player." I don't see, and the talk for the max contract started then. No, no, I don't see what they're talking about. But you can just watch him, and I was really impressed how, you know, just in moments, he'd catch the ball in space or something and face somebody up and give him a jab, and he's hitting the jump shot. He started slowly working the jump shot in, and you can see it. I know he'll never feature the guy who's going to give you 25 because that's not what the Spurs do. But just you know, you watching the game, you see him do something, it makes me kind of do a double take. And I think, wow, I didn't know Kawhi Leonard could do that. You know, the jump hooks, he gets in the post, he bangs a little bit, he gets somebody up and under. The guy, he's a really, really skilled player. So, but yeah, I understand people say they question LaMarcus in the mid-range jump shots because that's what he was asked to do in Portland. But I'm pretty sure, like you just said, Coach Popovich has the pull to be able to, hey, we're gonna run offense now here. We'll need you more here. And he took the max contract. I'm pretty sure he knows all about him. He knows about the Spurs way. So that's gonna be pretty impressive.
So yeah, I think that's right. My understanding is from what I've heard about the conversations that they had, which is that they had that initial meeting. And then as LaMarcus's decision got drawn out, Popovich had a second one-on-one meeting or phone call with LaMarcus. And my understanding is that those were very basketball-centric meetings, right? They were very X's and O's driven. They were very granular. They were about what his role and the reality of on the court would be. So I think that, you know, I think there's time that they have to figure it out. There's always tinkering. Pop loves to tinker, and there'll be a lot of changes and evolution over the course of the season, but it's not as if they don't have a vision for what they'd like to get to. I think they know how they intend to utilize him, and I think that, you know, I think that people don't realize how effectively, you know, he can stretch all the way to the three-point line, especially from that left on that left side where he likes to work. I mean, he's north of 40% 3-point shooter from that corner, which is obviously something they're going to try to work more of in. He's a terrific passer. He's a really good IQ player who's been in an offense where he hasn't had to utilize that IQ, right? He was allowed to catch the ball and just go to work. I think the Spurs are going to ask him to think and make decisions, and I think he's fully capable of doing that. So I think there's going to be some changes, but he's going to be pretty good in the long run. So.
Anyway. I mean, it almost seems unfair, man. But let's roll around to the tip of the spear. So I know Tony Parker he's still probably a top, I don't know, we'll just top 6-7 point guard in the league when he's healthy. One of the best to get into the lane, usually leads like all guards or sometimes even leads the league in paint scoring. But we haven't seen him be able to do that at the end of seasons the last few years. Let's see, 66 games in 2013, and then 68 next year, and then 68 last year. He seems like he always, from what I understand, it seems a lot of quads, a lot of, the knee was giving him issues last year.
Yeah.
He's slowing down a little bit.
Years ago, he had plantar fasciitis. You know, he's had a lot of lower body issues. So.
Right, and if I remember correctly, he's been playing pro probably since he was like 15 or 16 over there.
Yeah,
in,
he started really early in France, and he's been in the NBA since he was 19. But yeah, he was playing French pro ball, and it's not just that he's been pro. He's gone to the playoffs every single year. He's made 5 trips to the finals. I mean, that's a lot of extra mileage he's logged over the course of his career. The guy has played a lot of minutes of basketball.
And so much of the offense is predicated on him getting to the lane and collapsing the defense. And what are you concerned at all going into this season about? Because I mean, Spurs will still be dynamite even if Tony is, you know, if he has to sit. You guys brought in Ray McCollum, and Patty Mills is going to be healthy at the beginning of the season, right? But at the same time, what are your thoughts on Tony Parker going into the season? How do you see him being used and utilized? Of course, we know Pop loves to, you know, get his guys rest when he can. So, yeah, talk to me a little bit about Tony Parker this season.
Well, he's an interesting case. I think this is a really important and interesting year for him. I personally am very optimistic about him this year because I think it's the first year, it's the first time in several years where he will no longer be the focal point of the defense, which is that I think since roughly 2011 or 12, he really became the straw that stirred the drink, and it was and the best way to get the Spurs offense out of sorts was to take him out of the game. That's why in the finals in 2013, late in games, you saw the Heat, you know, covering Tony Parker with LeBron James, right? That was like, if we stop this guy, we stop their offense. I think
right.
that with the introduction of LaMarcus, that's no longer going to be the case. And not just LaMarcus, but also Kawhi, that at this point he's gone, he's still the point guard. He's still the initiator of the offense, but he was both the initiator and possibly at any given moment the most dangerous scorer. That is no longer true, and I think is going to kind of make his job easier. And then suddenly, I think you might see a bit of a Tony renaissance. Now, he's not going to go back to those years where he was, you know, a top five receiver of MVP votes, which he was getting a few years ago, which is, I think, just amazing to think about the fact that a guy like Tony Parker was ending up top five MVP voting. But I think he's, I think that there's going to be some decreased attention on him, and that's, I think it's going to, you know, it's going to do him good. I also think that they'll be pretty measured. I think at this point, they've learned their lesson, and they'll be very measured with his minutes and managing him, and that they're going to ask a lot of Patty Mills in terms of a backup because they really don't care about how many games Tony plays in the regular season. They want him to be healthy come the playoffs. So,
hey, so here's a hypothetical I've always wondered because we know Tony Parker had a rough couple years with San Antonio, right? And it was talked about, you know, shipping him off to Jason Kidd, whatever, and Tony
sure.
and Coach Popovich was very hard on him, as he, you know, he wanted him to play a certain way. He wasn't doing it. I don't know. I liked him back then, but I thought, all right, you know, he'll give you 15 and 5, and he might have been a bench player somewhere, but he's, you know, he really flourished. Do you think if he went to any other team that he would be the player he is now?
Oh, it's tough to say. I definitely get, like, what you're kind of suggesting or hinting at. I think probably not. I think that, you know, the way the relationship he has with Popovich is hard to imagine him recreating in any other context. But I also I just think that, you know, the way he's been able to evolve and the way it's been this studied, measured thing, or literally over a decade, it's about refining the most minor elements of the offense so that they are more perfectly tailored to suit his game. That the level of detail that they've shown over what is at this point, you know, a dozen years, it's hard to imagine. And him getting that kind of coaching attention in any other situation, not, and I don't mean coaching attention like the coach wouldn't focus on him a lot as the point guard, but just the way that they've tinkered and loosened this and tightened that and the way that they've really just calibrated everything so perfectly over the course of what has been a long career in San Antonio, you just don't get that lots of places, especially if you're not truly – you only normally get that kind of attention if you're like a top 10 NBA player, which Tony is obviously not, right? You know what I mean? Tony's obviously not. But his longevity has allowed him to receive this extra special care that I think is really unique.
I think people get, you know, they took it wrong or they it sounds like a negative connotation when I was like, I said, well, he's a system point guard. But because he came up in that system, it allowed him to be who he is, who he was in his prime. right? So I wasn't saying that it's all, but yeah, I think if you just took Tony Parker as he came in the league and put him on the, I don't know, the Bobcats or whatever, he would have never developed and honed himself to the point where he was an all-star. So that was my thing about it. And hey, it's not his fault. It's not his only player in a great system of great players. That's what every player wants.
Well, I think the problem we come to when we think about system stuff is that we get trapped in, we insist that it be a one-way street, that it either be the player that is excelling or the system that is creating the excellence of the player, right? Where in fact, they're in dialogue, right? Like they're feeding off one another. They're altering and changing. The player is adjusting to the system and the system is adjusting to the player and his abilities, but they're constantly in dialogue. And I think the Spurs and the way that you've seen them evolve from the four down, bang on the block, you know, very low paced offense to the fast paced, you know, volume 3-point shooting, weak side motion offense is as evidence of that as anything, as the players and the system in dialogue with one another and going back and forth.
Right. I can't think of another team that had the same core that has evolved so many times as the Spurs. They started off with the Twin Towers, and then they transitioned to, I guess, like you said, it was pretty much, you know, just banging slang down there with Tim Duncan and then, you know, Rasho Nestorovich or whoever. And then they made Tony Parker the focal point, and then you guys had that sublime finals against the Heat where that was just, I've never seen a team play that well for so, you know, for over a 5-game stretch. That was just a drubbing like I've never seen before. So, you're back and reloaded. We didn't even touch on David West and Manu Ginobili. what would you think? All right, so there's not many flaws or holes right now in the roster, but what is one thing that you think that could be potentially an issue? We spoke earlier about the big bangers.
Yeah, I think that there's questions around, you know, defensive big man is and, you know, they obviously picked up this giant Serbian guy, Boban Marjanovic, who, you know, it's unclear, you know, kind of how capable he is. He's a huge body, and he'll provide a lot of help during the regular season, just sucking up minutes. I don't think he'll be a huge impact in the postseason. But I think for me, the big question is probably the biggest hole, quote unquote, is bench scoring, that with the decline of Manu, there's not a really, and with losing Marco Bellinelli, which is, it seems funny to focus on him, but there's not a really dynamic, you know, ball in my hand scorer on the second unit. There's a lot of guys who can put the ball in the basket in a lot of different ways, but the second unit really is going to have to be polished and play as a team in order to make a really big impact, which I think they can. They'll be great, but I think if they take the time and focus, but they've lost a lot of guys, and there's going to be a little bit of adjustment there and a little bit of a learning curve. Even though they've got some vet guys still, there's still a learning curve with the new players coming in.
I can't believe that you would say that when you guys have Jimmer Fredette sitting on the bench. Exactly.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, sure.
Hey, I'm proud of you. You know what? You held a straight face for about a good 3 seconds. That was impressive.
If you could see my face, you could see that I didn't hold a straight face. I just took me a few seconds to even just start laughing out loud. Now, I don't have the highest hopes for Jimmer, but you know, it's a low risk move. I don't mind. You know what? If he ends up being great, well, bully to RC. He's a smarter man than I am. He must have seen something that I never saw. So.
the Spurs way has been so great for so long that when I heard that Jimmer went there, I had to kind of a little pissed. I was like, watch, they're going to turn Jimmer into a serviceable, actual role player who's going to come off the bench and give them 7 points and shoot like 43% from three.
It's funny that they're like that. Every time they pick up one of those guys, it's funny. They've done it so many times that you question yourself. You think like, wait, am I Like, I swear this guy is terrible. Like, am I wrong? Like, what am I missing? They're the only team that really makes me doubt myself. So
that's exactly. If the Spurs are interested in him, you think, all right, there's got to be something there because the Spurs are going to give him a look.
Yeah.
So give me a projection this year. What do you think? What do you think? Where do the Spurs fall in the rough and tumble West? Where do you think they're going to end up?
So I don't think they're the first seed. I think the Warriors are still probably the first seed. I think that they're maybe not even the second or the third. They're going to be very measured in their minutes, right? They do not care about regular season success. They have their eyes on the prize. They're trying to win a title. Their whole focus is postseason health. So I think that it's possible that they're a little bit lower, but I see them as probably the two or three seed, because I think they've got a lot of talent, and I think they also, as much as they're focused on postseason health, I also think they feel a little burned after this season having to face the Clippers in the first round. I think people sometimes underestimate how reactive they can be to the previous season's experience and how much they adjust very in relationship to the near-term past. And
right.
I think that they'll be focused on not having to face an opponent of that caliber in the first round.
Right.
I think it's probably Warriors. I'll say Warriors, Spurs. Gosh, I mean, it's Warriors, Spurs, Clippers, Thunder, Rockets in some order. That's what I would say. I see those as the top five teams in the West. And then the back of the West for me is Warriors, Spurs, Clippers, Thunder, Rockets, Grizzlies, Pelicans, and Suns. Is the eight teams in the West, in my opinion. I think the Blazers and Mavs fall out of the playoffs, and the Suns and Thunder hop back in.
Of course. So what is Utah missing, you think? Just a little more seasoning?
I give them another. Utah is you're right to question that. Like, where is Utah in that? I think I give them like one more year of maturation and coming together. Just personally, it feels to me like, well, the Thunder, I have no bones about, right? Like, add Kevin Durant back, and I think you're back in, right? You have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka, like, you're back in the playoffs. Those are, you know.
Right.
I think that. For me, I just feel like the Suns have been a little closer to understanding themselves and their identity for a couple years more. They've just felt like they were knocking on the door. And with the addition of Tyson Chandler, I just like them. I like what they can do, in that division. I don't know. I see if the Jazz are in the playoffs, I won't be surprised. I'll put it like that.
Right.
They're not my pick to make it.
I think I have Phoenix 7 and I got Jazz 8. I'm worried about New Orleans. They didn't really, everybody else kind of reloaded and kind of upgraded the ammunition.
Right.
And New Orleans didn't really do that. And I know that they're bringing in a new coach and hopefully that he'll make the Brown more of a weapon. But personnel wise, they didn't really add anything. And they were,
That's true. But I am an Alvin Gentry fan. I thought he did amazing work in Phoenix. I think the post D'Antoni Phoenix years under Alvin Gentry are like an underappreciated era of success there. Maybe I overly rate them because they actually swept the Spurs under Alvin Gentry. It was the first time they had beaten the Spurs in quite some time in the playoffs. And then maybe I overly focus on that, but I thought he did great assistant work in Golden State. I just think that you're going to see their offense start to really take off. And I think they're going to be – I'm also just so high on Anthony Davis. I mean, I'm on the bandwagon. I'm there. Like, I just think he's awesome. So, like a generational player, in my opinion. So it's hard for me to discount them.
You won't find anybody to disagree with you. I'm pretty sure that I think I've heard Zach Lowe even say he has Brown as the MVP next season. My only concern is the way that these weird injuries keep happening, and he's going to miss 2 weeks here and three weeks there, and if he's missing time, they're going to struggle. You know, so that's my only concern is that, what is he, this is his fourth season? Third season?
Fourth, right? He's coming up on his fourth, right?
What's wrong with this, right?
Yeah.
This is something that we should know.
it's something we should know.
But yeah, like last season, he was just driving the lane and bumped into some guy as he went up, and he separated his shoulder, and it's just always something, weird little injuries with him. So he has to stay healthy. If him, Reek, and Eric Gordon can stay relatively healthy, this can be his fourth season. We're right. That's good. But yeah, he played 64. Then he played 67. And he played 68. You know, so it's.
Yeah,
but
I'm
with you on Phoenix.
I definitely agree that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Yes.
I was gonna say, but fundamentally though, I see 1 through 9 as being, you know, the 18s I mentioned, and then Utah with the possibility of the Mavs sneaking in just because they've been doing it for so long. I don't want to totally discount their ability to hang tough and somehow figure out how to win 50 games. Also,
we
have terrific coaching.
I will. I'm doing it. I'm saying, well, listen, what can I say? If Dallas makes the playoffs, I don't know. If Dallas makes the playoffs, I will eat my fitted cap on live TV.
We've got this on the record now, so we'll hold you to it. Admittedly,
you know how fast I would delete. I would delete this show so fast.
I don't think they're gonna. I mean, admittedly, I don't think you're ever gonna have to do that because I don't think they're gonna make the playoffs, especially after the way they played the last 2 years. I mean, they've basically squeaked into the playoffs the last 2 years, and now you're looking at them having a pretty major drop off. In my opinion, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. It's going to be tough for them. I mean, I feel kind of bad for Dirk that this is going to be his last couple of years, whatever. So back to the Spurs a little bit. What would be, let's say, out of those top four or five teams you named, what would be the matchup I'm not going to say you'd most like to see because they're all tough. Your most favorable matchup in a Western Conference Finals, if it gets to that point, what would be your most favorable matchup?
That's a good question. I think that the most favorable matchup is probably, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what's most favorable. Playing any of those teams isn't,
right,
you know,
exactly,
especially appealing. You know, I think the Spurs, I would confidently pick the Spurs over the Thunder. I think they have a formula for beating the Thunder at this point.
Really?
I think the Thunder have shed some. Yeah. I would like the Spurs. I would pick the Spurs over the Thunder in probably 6. I would probably pick the Spurs over. I have questions about Spurs Clippers. I think that would be very, very narrow again. I think that the team I really want to see them play is the Warriors. They gave the Warriors last year more trouble than any other team in the NBA. They were one of just a handful of teams to beat them in Oakland, and they also beat them by, you know, more than 20 in San Antonio near the end of the season. Between Danny and Kawhi, they had the best defensive backcourt answer to Clay and Steph that anybody really could muster. Because Kawhi really did a terrific job on Steph, and Danny is tailor-made to defend Clay. So he thinks just like him. He understands everything he's doing. So I think that with the reloaded offensive abilities they have, I think they can really hang. I'd really love to see Spurs Warriors, as I think that's – I don't know that I'd pick the Spurs, but I sure as hell think they could beat them if they played
right.
well. But I, you know, that's so I, but it's tough. I mean, I think any of those five teams could beat any of the other five. You know, it's, I think that that's, I think any of those, I think it's just, it's a bloodbath. It's a total bloodbath.
It is, man. It's crazy. So all the Thunder fans out there who are listening, it's at Mr. Gordian, and he just said that he said that OKC is a pushover and the Spurs would dominate them.
pushover was not my language. Pushover
find him on Twitter. It's at Mr. Gordian. He said out of all the teams in the West, I think the OKC Thunder would be the easiest ones to beat. So you got to make sure you tell him about that when you see him on Twitter. All right, so what do you think the least favorable matchup is out West?
You know, it's funny to say this, but the Spurs historically have, I don't think they're the best team, but the Spurs have historically struggled against this Rockets team. I think that Dwight and his athleticism poses a problem, and they've historically had a really, really hard time with James Harden. James Harden has played incredibly well against the Spurs going all the way back to his OKC years. And I think that I don't think the Rockets are the best team of that five. They're probably four or five in my opinion, just kind of like on paper over the course of the season. But I think they're a tricky matchup for them. I think they're a tricky matchup. And I think that, you know, we'll see what ties Ty Lawson's health is like, but I think they've got some weapons. I think that they'd be, you know, they've done a thing. They've basically always put the Spurs in shootouts. The only times I've seen the Spurs beat the Rockets in the Harden years is when they've gone off offensively. I've never seen them really, I mean, maybe once or twice here, but they've never really, really, really shut down the Rockets. I've seen them shut down the Thunder. I've seen them shut down the Warriors. I've seen them shut down the Clippers. I just kind of have to admit that there's is a difficulty there.
I guess my thing with the caveat about the OKC is that, like, even last year, they had the benefit, or not last year, the year before, they had the benefit, and, I mean, hey, injuries are part of the game. But Serge missed those first two games, and even when he came back, he wasn't quite 100%. You know, and then the year before that, you know, Russ got hurt, so the men beat him, and...
Well, they never played them that year, yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, Memphis knocked OKC out. So that's my thing. Is like, I understand that, you know, last couple of years it's been pretty dominant, but OKC has been all the way healthy, and those two guys are, you know, Russ and KD are absolute killers. But, I mean, hey, you know your team better than I do. I can't even argue
with
you. No,
I think, don't get me wrong. I mean, if you, if the Thunder beat the Spurs in the playoffs, and, like, you'd be crazy to say, oh, I'm shocked or whatever by that, right? I mean, I think it's completely plausible. If two of the top 10, arguably top five players in the NBA, right? I mean, it's like they're a fantastic team. It's like, and I just think that there's a lot of unknowns with them. It's not just health. We don't know what Billy Donovan's going to look like. I personally was never a Scott Brooks fan. I always felt Brooks held them back in terms of what they were capable of. So
Hands
we
out.
Don't know.
Yeah.
We don't even know what the coaching situation looks like and maybe ways that they can be optimized in ways that they haven't been in the past. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Thunder are significantly better than they've been in the past. I mean, maybe we're underestimating how good they could be with a new coach, right? You know, so like, I think there's serious questions here. There's really serious questions. And I think that with that you've seen with the emergence of Kawhi, you've seen a guy who, while you can't ever take KD out of a game, is in a pretty good position to check KD, as good as, you know, anybody possibly. I think that the Spurs, basically, though, well, I think the Spurs have done the best against the Thunder when they've been able to move quickly and check the Thunder with space, to counter the Thunder's athleticism with their own small ball and quickness. You saw this when they stopped starting Splitter and started Bonner instead, who isn't even fast, but just spaced the floor and opened up the whole thing and really created problems for Serge at the five,
right,
trying to cover Bonner. I think that in an era with LaMarcus Aldridge and Duncan, that's only multiplied even more in terms of their ability to still score and not have to do it right at the basket, or to score in ways that at the basket, but that pulls Serge away. I think that they've got a lot of ways to do that. So I think they could be pretty clever about how they'd attack that team. That's where my head's at.
Yeah, but then we have Russ, the destroyer of worlds. So that's gonna be. I'm really excited to see OKC full strength again. I think the additions of Kyle Singler and DJ Augustine are gonna go far, because they actually have someone to run the offense behind Russ, and I think Sam's going to be a nice addition. And I know people aren't high on Cantor. We're not going to get into the whole Cantor thing, but, I mean, hey, if he can give them 12 to 14 and grab them 7-8 rebounds, I think he'll be a little better defensively than people think he's going to be. I know he's not going to lock anybody down, but I really think that his whole, he's such a horrible guy, horrible player, has been a little bit overblown. It's weird how things just kind of get into the general mind of the NBA player, NBA fan, and it runs, because you would think that Cantor, was freaking, I don't know. Do you think he was Bill Cartwright?
Oh yeah, he was terrible, right? Yeah, you think he was literally one of the worst, player, right? I mean, totally, absolutely. Like they're just trashing him. I get it. He is not a good defensive player. Like, I get it, but he's also an incredibly skilled offensive player. Like, he's definitely an NBA, an above replacement NBA player. It's just, Wait, but you asked me. So what do you see? Where do you see the Spurs ending up? Where do you put them? Do you include them in that top five? Do you think
definitely. And my lineup in the West is something like, I got Golden State 1. I think I got OKC 2. I think I had Spurs 3. I want to say probably, I think Clippers 4, Houston 5. I have 6 or 7.
Probably Grizzlies 6,
yeah? Grizzlies 6. And then I had Phoenix 7, and I had Utah 8. I was worried about I was worried about New Orleans if they added enough. But I can take nothing away from this bird right now. I was. They tip your hat to them for that offseason they had.
I think that's right though. I mean, that's a pretty plausible playoff lineup in my opinion.
My fingers are crossed for Billy Donovan to be good. But the simple fact that I don't want to see KD leave OKC. I like the thought of him having a Tim Duncan type career where he stays with this one team and they build and they kind of move pieces around him and maybe Russ and Serge. I would love to see that there in OKC. So let's do a speed round kind of. We'll pick it up a little bit here. I'm gonna ask you a couple questions and first thing that comes to mind. So we all saw what Jimmy Butler did last year. What player do you think makes the leap like him this year? Somebody who's, they were a decent player last year, and this year they really step out, coming to their own.
Oh, gosh. You and I talked about this beforehand. You said you would answer this, and I don't have a good answer. I honestly racked my brain over this, and I don't have a good answer. I think Dennis Schroeder could improve. I want to see... I'm skeptical, but I want to see Greg Monroe do well. I don't think he's going to – I think Greg Monroe has some flaws, but I love what the Bucks are setting up. So maybe it's like Antetokounmpo or somebody – it's probably somebody on the Bucks whom I'm high on, and I want to see him do well.
I'm 100% in. I think the Bucks are going to be one of those – they're going to be must-see TV with Jabari back.
Yeah,
it's
Jabari or it's Antetokounmpo or it's like something – It's Humphrey. It's something on the Bucks. It's one of those Bucks guys I think has a big year.
I'm going down south. I think it's going to be in Orlando. I think Tobias Harris is going to really explode this year. Or Victor Oladipo. I think Oladipo is going to be great this year. I love
the
game.
Answer. Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that too. I think the Magic are gonna be awesome. I think they're gonna be great.
Is there a team or a player? Hey, it sounds almost mean to say a player that you see falling off, but maybe somebody whose performance last year was a one-time thing, and this year they're going to kind of regress to the mean.
I see falling off, I'm sad to admit it, is Damari Carroll, whom I really love as a player, but I think is going from an offense that was very, very high assist to a very, very low assist offense, top of the league to bottom of the league, and I think so much of his offensive output was system created. I think that he might struggle shooting a little bit this year because the shots aren't going to be as open. It's not going to flow as freely. The ball isn't going to in Toronto. I think he's a great guy, but and I wish him the best, but I think you can see a down year from him. I'm also interested to see what happens with Damian Lillard. I don't think Lillard's going to fall off in the sense that he's not super talented, but this is the first year where I think he's operating in a non-playoff context with a non-playoff, you know, teammate. And I'm just interested to see how he reacts to that. And does he struggle? How much can he lift them up? How much can, you know, of it does it kind of, you know, challenge him? That's something I have my eye on.
You know what? It's funny. I think the opposite about Dame. I think Dame is I think we might see a performance with shades of Allen Iverson, because he's on a team with nothing but young athletes to run with him. He's going to have every shot he wants in the gym, and he might be our scoring leader this year. He might shoot a cool 41%, but he's going to shoot a lot of threes. He's going to make a lot of threes, and I think we might be our scoring leader. I wonder...
Yeah.
It's funny you said Damari Carroll, because I'm thinking that Kyle Korver, he's going to have I think teams have enough film on it now. And yeah, people sat in his pocket last year and he was a flamethrower. But I think now without Carroll out there beside him, and I don't know who's going to have out there beside him, I think he might take a little step down. And he was all-star last year, and he should have been. The way he bent the defense was just amazing. I don't know if they can recreate what they did last year, and I think his numbers might struggle a bit because they can't.
Well, he's getting the heat is on. The defensive attention he's going to receive is going to be off the charts compared to last year, which he's going to be the whole goal is going to be shutting him down, which was not the case last year.
So much of his game is predicated on, you know, moving off the ball. So if his ankle's not back to 100%, he's going to have some trouble. We didn't touch on the East too much. Can you give me your East? How about your East rundown real quick, 1-8?
Whew, this is also hard because the East is it's funny that the both conferences are hard to call, but for like basically the opposite reasons. I mean, I put the Cavs at the top just because, sure.
I think for the next few years, the Cavs are going to be, you know, everybody's number one for the next couple of years.
If Love and Kyrie are healthy, I'm presuming LeBron will stay healthy. It's hard to, now that they've found a rhythm, that they understand how to play together, I mean, it's hard to imagine them not winning north of 60 games and that easily being the best record in the East. I think that the Hawks probably aren't. Like, I think that the Hawks are probably still a top four team, but definitely not one anymore. I think the Heat are going to come back real strong with a healthy Wade and Bosch, which I hope they stay. If Bosch and Wade can stay healthy for a full season, I think you're talking a top five team in the East, if they can stay healthy. I love the Bucks to jump up there a few slots. I think the Raptors are probably still a top four team. I think the Raptors can still win their division probably, as they did last year. So they're still a top four team.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know. I mean, it's all for me. It's a real the East. I also again like who was going to blow up. I knew you were going to ask me this question, and I was looking at the East, and I genuinely was like, I don't know. Like, I don't have a good answer here. I felt super, like, I was trying to map out my thinking on it, and I was like, I don't have an answer. So many teams to me feel like they could be the four seed or they could miss the playoffs. It felt like so many teams to me felt like they could be that they're just they felt like the Celtics, for instance, whom played really well during the back half of last year, and I think could be a tough team coming into this year. I could also see them missing the playoffs.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We just don't have enough talent. I mean, I know they're going to play hard. They're going to play smart. They're going to do everything that Coach Stevens wants, but we just don't have that much talent. That's where I think we're going to struggle. In the East, I had, of course, Cavs. And, hey, Wizards fans, again, his name is at Mr. Gordian. He thought the Wizards aren't going to make the playoffs, so...
No, I think you're right. Are you putting them at two? I think that's probably right. Them at
I have
worst,
them number,
like three at worst. You know, I put them somewhere in there.
I have them number two, and I think that I didn't say this earlier, but Bradley Beal is another good breakout candidate. As far as, you know, we all know he's a good young player, but he might end up, you know, at 22 points a game next season. I got the Heat number three. I'm still. Yeah. I want to leave in the Hawks, man. But they've been having such a rough off season, and they had. So I got the Hawks 4, Bulls 5, Bucks 6, and I got the Raptors and Celtics. I'm not big on the Raptors because something just seems to be missing. And I know that Fujiri was, you know, 1 second away from blowing it up a couple years ago, and they kind of got
here's my point. Wait, think about what you just said there, though. You said Cavs. Wizards, you said Cavs, Wizards, Heat, Hawks, right?
Correct.
It can't go down like that because you've got the Raps as the number one team in the East. In their division, you've got the Raps
in
their division.
I thought this year they were. No, I thought this year they were going to stop doing that.
Say what you just said one more time.
I thought they were going to stop giving the division champ.
Did they say that? I thought they were saying they were exploring it, but I thought they hadn't made that rule.
Well, in my mind, they've already made it. They've already made it in my mind, so I'm going to say.
But it's clearly a rule they should make.
Yeah, it's just it's whack. So
it's totally whack. It's totally whack. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I personally want them to seed, you know. 1 through 8, I want them the best 16 teams just make the playoffs. That's what I want to see. But, the Raptors just seem I almost wish they blew it up.
If I'm with you in terms of, like, actual ability, if we get a confirmation of did they change that rule or not, I'm happy to reform my opinion based on that. Putting the Raps that high was purely predicated on the belief that they – I think will win their division, and then I was thinking of them in the old playoff structure. That was why I put them that high, I think they are more talented.
I'll say that my way of doing it was just I was just doing the record, the best record in the East. That's what I was. Before we wrap up, let me another fun question we got here. Give me a projection. What do you think Kawhi is going to end up in 4 years? No more Tim Duncan. LaMarcus will be, what, I guess, how many people, 34 by then? A little older, whatever.
Right.
It'll be Kawhi's team. Parker will be gone in about 4 years, and it's Kawhi's team. Let's say now we have a fully formed Kawhi Leonard. Give me a rundown of his numbers. What do you think he'll be? What's the stat line look like in 4 years?
Sure. 4 years from now, I think he's probably – you know, at least a three-time All-Star. I think he's if not a four-time, but I think he'll probably make the All-Star team a few times. But I think he's borderline a 20-point player per game. He's just south of it, I think. He's not actually, but that's more of a systemic thing than an abilities thing.
Right.
I think he's never going to be asked to actually take that many shots, especially while LaMarcus is still on the team, which I think LaMarcus, a bit like Duncan, has not to the same effect, but has an offensive game that will age well, and a bit like Dirk in that sense. I think the types of things that LaMarcus does on offense aren't super based around athleticism, and therefore he'll be able to still be a volume scorer kind of deep into his career. I think that I think he'll be probably an even – I think his rebound numbers will be up. I think he'll be maybe a borderline 8 to 10 rebound per game guy, but that's because I think the game is going smaller, and over the years I think you're going to see more and more Kawhi Leonard at the four. I think that's the future of the game, is guys like Kawhi and LeBron and players of that size in the power forward position. So yeah, he might see a bigger rebounding load from him. I think you'll also see his assist numbers creep up, but I think he's probably a bench all-star player for the next, you know, 5 or 6 years. But he's not talented enough that depth is going to have to remain a focal point for the Spurs if they're going to excel.
Really?
Given the players that they put at the top. I think so. I think that in 2 to 3 years, when Duncan and Manu are gone and they've got Kawhi and LaMarcus at the top of the order, they're going to need still some guys in 7 through 10 who can do really good work. Because I think that those aren't – I think when you look at the best starting fives in the NBA, they're better than they are. Right, the two best players.
Okay.
Blake and Chris. Westbrook and Durant. A lot of guys. You know, they're two best players. It can't be all about the top of the order. It can't be about.
Okay, you make a good point. You're right, because I think Kawhi definitely could be one of those top. Like, honestly, 10 to 15, you know, top 10 to 15 player in his prime. But you're right, because, but in 4 years, are Westbrook and Durant going to even be together? You know, that's the kind of
question.
I'm just saying
that the top teams in the NBA have been able to amass talent in that way. LeBron and Kyrie, or LeBron and Love, whichever you think is better. You know, they're like, I think that when you're looking at the very, very starter heavy units, their starters are better than Kawhi and LaMarcus and Mike Danny, right? That's as far as like a top three or something, right? That's,
you're absolutely right. You're right.
So.
I guess I got starstruck by the Spurs, but you're absolutely right. So yeah, I think Kawhi is going to be a dynamite player, man.
Absolutely. I think a Hall of Fame player, probably. I think he could be a won a Finals MVP, which is no small, you know, achievement, right? But we're talking about how do you stay really competitive in a league that, in my opinion, is in a golden age of just competitiveness and talent. So
give me a win total for the Spurs this year.
I say 57.
Wow. That's conservative. Let me see if I'm right. You're saying that 57, that's a conservative win, but like you said earlier, they're not going to be going balls out. Everyone's going to play probably about 30 minutes again. They're going to rest Tony Parker as much as possible to keep him healthy. Don't think they're going to get nights off when, you know, they're playing a team with no real center or banger. So that's you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. We'll see flashes during the regular season where they'll go on a hot run of 5 games where they just blow guys out, and then they'll settle back down, and everybody back to the benches, everybody just relax. So, okay.
That is where my thinking is there. It's not that from a talent standpoint. Like, anybody who's you're going to see some statistical-based projections coming into the season about what they are or aren't supposed to do, what they're, you know, in terms of on paper, you know, what their combined PER is or their wins above replacement or whatever, that some of those projections are not going to take into account the fact that they're not going to play to their full potential during the regular season. This is why I actually really like your prediction about the Thunder at 2 and the Spurs at 3, which for me, the Thunder are far more likely to play to their full potential in the or closer to their full potential during the regular season. Far more likely to do their best to win regular season games and have a high seed.
I want to see the main guys healthy on the main teams, man. That's a, injuries suck so bad that years, right? Oh man.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really that's a long rabbit hole and maybe another day for another podcast, but it definitely, I don't know whether it's we just are focusing on it more now, but in recent years it does feel as if injuries are taking away from the game. It does feel as if
I saw people write about this stuff and they say that it hasn't really changed, but I can't, it just seems like it, man. It seems like,
yeah.
Wow.
I know, every year. That's right.
Yeah, man, it's tough. And you guys, we got the Team USA stuff that we'll all be looking at here soon. So I'm excited, man. So let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me at Mr. Mr. Gordian, Gordian, Mr. Gordian, and you can read the stuff that myself and my guys write at 48minutesofhell.com if you're looking for Spurs coverage. You know, follow us and read our stuff throughout the season. We're excited, and we'll be giving you our best.
Great, man. I really appreciate you coming on. I'm definitely going to have you on during the season because we're going to check in, and you can gloat some more because your team's probably going to be dominant. And my Celtics will be out there trotting out eight guards and a bunch of undersized power forwards, and yay, whatever.
Yeah, but you got a great coach. You know, Stevens will get some good stuff out of him.
You know what? I don't want to be the 7th, 8th seed anymore, man. I want to get some real deal talent in town and put some guys around them and actually start building a team that's going to be a contender. That's where I'm sitting at right now. So
talking like a Boston fan, I like it. There you go. You're talking like a real Boston fan. There you go. Don't settle for
Hey, man. So everybody, this is Graydon Gordian from 48minutesofhell.com. Hey, Graydon, thanks for coming by, and we'll have you on again soon.
Yep, thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good night.
You too.
Man, we talked a little too much and we ran along pretty long, so Jesse's going to kill me for that. Sorry, Jesse. That was episode 5 of the Instant Offense podcast. I'm James Hollis. And join me next time when I have another guest who's probably going to be a lot better at this basketball talk stuff than me. So, that's it. Good night.